Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. The phone has not rung all day, and all of a sudden it just started ringing. So, anyway, I hope you can hear me now. For those in the chat room, can you hear me? Hi, Gulag, nice to see you. Welcome to a very special evening this evening. If you can't hear me out there, just please put something in the chat room and let me know. John F. Kennedy said when he was still alive that those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And I note that many of us are acutely aware of the extreme danger we are in because of the ineligible president that we have, or ineligible, basically, person, not a president, a usurper in office, and it's jeopardizing our country and so forth. It's like we don't need any other proof that something's going on. So we have exhausted pretty much every route. As you know, last week we had Commander Kirshner and Attorney Apuzzo on. Their case was heard before the Supreme Court, their petition. We should hear next week what the outcome is. But in that petition for writ, this is basically asking the Supreme Court to identify the definition of natural-born citizen and to make an effort to unmask the usurper, hold up the Constitution, and uphold the law. So tonight we have another constitutional hero that's with us. The brother of our constitutional hero, and he's Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin. We're going to have a nice talk. There's a song out there for Terry, which I tried to upload, but it's not showing on my system quite yet. So I'm going to welcome Dr. Greg Lakin. Welcome.
Hello,
you're live.
You.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
Oh, very good.
How about
very good.
Yes. No, I sure appreciate you having me on the show. This is an issue that really needs to be addressed, and nobody knows it more than you and your listeners. It's refreshing to have a group that's so updated and educated on the issues.
Well, great. I'm so glad you're here. And I realized that I'd been emailing the wrong address, so I apologize. So thank you for connecting with us. Folks out there, please welcome Dr. Greg Lakin, brother of Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin. And we're going to have a nice discussion this evening about Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin and what's going on, and we invite your questions whenever you'd like to call in, if you'd like. And we'll be taking a little bit of a break and a couple of moments, well, a little bit longer than that, to see if I can't find the dedication song. Have you heard this song, Greg?
You know, I have not. I have not, no.
It just came out in a couple of days. It's kind of fun. So we'll see if we can pick it up. But please tell us your background. Are you the older brother, younger brother? You're both doctors. Tell us a little bit of where you are and what happened, your work in support of Terry. What have been your observations with this whole ordeal?
Well, I'm the oldest of three boys, and we were all kind of called into helping make the world a better place was kind of our calling, I think. And so I was a city police officer when I finished undergraduate school, and then noticed many of the people I was arresting were the same people over and over again. So I left and attended law school and became a prosecuting attorney, and was a prosecuting attorney for several years in Hawaii. During that time, I noticed that most people with criminal charges against them were just people with problems, and people that needed to be helped, and people that maybe had mental disorders or people that had issues with addiction. And so I then followed in my little brother's footsteps and went into more of a humanitarian type of field, and that was medicine. So I went back to med school and became a family practitioner, and have really focused on senior health care, addiction, psychological disorders, and more recently was called into Terry's cause because Terry, who has been a true patriot and represented his country well for the last 18 years, and even before that he was a EMT and was right on the front lines of trying to help people even before that. But the brother can stand back only so long, and when justice doesn't seem like it's happening, or when you don't feel like your family's being treated fairly, it's time to speak up and jump on board.
Very good. Wow, what a career. I'm not going to ask you your age, but wow, that's a lot to accomplish in a time. Where were you a police officer?
In Colorado.
Colorado, okay.
Right.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, it was Greeley, Colorado. Greeley's north of Denver. It's, right.
Very good. Thank you for providing that background for us, and I'm so glad you're here. Now, I met Margaret Hemingway this summer, well, actually in the fall. You may have seen my article on the Usurpathon that we were doing. We actually, three of us, met Terry, broke bread, had a nice time. And Margaret told me a little bit about you, background, and apparently you wrote yourself to Obama, and you actually are a Democrat, or were, or something like that. Is that right? And do you mind me being so forward and asking that question?
No. I would describe myself as an extreme moderate, and what that means to me is that, and it's kind of a, does the very far right scare me more or the very far left scare me more? And so I usually vote for the party that scares me the least, and that's a sad commentary on the present circumstances. But how we are. When we're younger, we're very idealistic and almost an activist. And then as you really look and learn, you start to see that even people that have good intent sometimes are perhaps in error on how to accomplish the same desires. And so I would say that I was probably more democratic, and now I'm very disappointed in the current regime, and so you know, I'm in the state of Kansas, and there's been a lot of backlash here in the state of Kansas in this last election, and it's almost completely swung, to the red, really.
So you wrote to Obama about this, and did you get any reply?
No, I wrote him.
What did you say?
I wrote him three very humble letters. Very humble letters. This is before Terry had even been charged, or Lieutenant Colonel Lake had even been charged with any charges whatsoever. And my hope was that this could all be just resolved, peacefully, without much issue. That Obama would be the kind of man that would, rise above taking it personal, would do presidential type of acts, and I was very disappointed. Basically, I explained to, Obama, and I don't even know if I should call him President Obama, but I explained to Obama that this was an issue that was important not only to my brother, but to many in the military, and that they all took the same oath to uphold the Constitution, and that the issue of his eligibility to hold office is his issue and his issue alone, and it's his issue to fix, and that, this can be done, and, I didn't even care how he did it. I mean, send a copy of your birth certificate into some independent group, or the Supreme Court, or the Supreme General of the military, or some, that's all Terry was basically asking for is a showing, a showing of some type of supportive proof that you are, in fact, a citizen, a natural-born citizen, something along those lines. And I sent three to him before charges were even pressed, and I received no response whatsoever until I got a letter from the military judge advocate general saying that the letters have been forwarded to him or to them from the president. So I know the president got them, and I even sent a copy to Vice President Biden just to make sure that this was forwarded to him. And so it's unfortunate that the president or Obama didn't even have enough honor or respect to respond to my letters or to address them, address the issue, even in a smaller form.
I'm curious, what did the JAG say once he got the forwarded letters? Did he write to you and say anything, or just that he got them?
They advised me that they would be handling the correspondence from now on. Basically, if I remember the response, it was pretty
curt.
It was short. It was short. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
first sign of breaking the chain of command.
Right, and these were letters that were kind of person to person letters. They weren't necessarily meant to be shared, and they weren't put on any website. They weren't put on any. They weren't for the media at that time, and yet to him they were, simply to be used to further potential court martial rather than take care of the issue. So I now have no respect for the man, and it wasn't always that way, and that's unfortunate.
Wow. That is really amazing, because he did get them, because he forwarded them. And, I was thinking about this, maybe it was early this morning, about how much this issue of Obama's eligibility has been thwarted by the quote-unquote standing. I know that you've looked at, some of the other cases and have a general view. But it's curious to me that Terry has, Lieutenant Colonel Lakin has, enough standing to be punished, but apparently not enough standing to get an answer to his question. which is pretty basic.
You know, that's so true. If you know, many of these hearings, I can understand why the court perhaps would say that they didn't have standing. I mean, the relationship was remote. However, in his case, you know, and remember, Terry's already been to Afghanistan. He's already, I think his last tour is 16 months. He's been to Korea. He's been to Bosnia. He's been to areas of conflict. But when he was redeployed, it was after Obama himself said that he, in December at West Point, he said, I am, you know, signing an order to deploy another 20,000 troop surge, you know, to Afghanistan. And so he took utter full credit for it, and as only a president can sign a deployment, and that was, you know, where Lieutenant Colonel's deployment was to be, part of that 20,000 troop surge. And for them to say that he doesn't have standing is, I find, unjustifiable, really. So, you know, in some ways, the circumstances chose him because he believed that if anybody would have standing, it would be him. And evidently, the military courts essentially ruled that nobody can possibly have standing against their commander-in-chief or challenging their commander-in-chief with this current initial motion ruling.
You know, and but if nobody can have standing, then it doesn't follow that he gets standing to have, you know, have to be punished, because that would seem to me, even if the military justice system is, you know, different than, you know, the court of federal law or, you know, state law and so forth, civilian courts, that just flies in the face of everything, it would seem to me, in terms of ensuring even the modicum of military justice. I mean, in his oath, he's advised, and I guess in review of his Army manual, he ended up feeling that in this situation, he actually has to bring it to the attention of his chain of command. And so he was in a no-win situation because he's required to do so, and yet they chose to single him out.
You're completely right. No, he tried for over a year and a half, you know, before he was ever ordered to deploy, to follow the normal chain of commands to try to get some answers with regard to, you know, the commander-in-chief or the reported commander-in-chief's eligibility to be commander-in-chief. And he went through all the normal channels. And he, let me just say up front that he has no issue with the Army. He loves the Army. He's made the Army his life. Mm-hmm. He's been in the Army for 18 years representing this country. But he, you know, the Army is not prepared to handle it. And so they did not handle it, nor, as it went up the chain of command, do I think they wanted to handle it. And so it's unfortunate that the Army and the military is put in that situation. But again, you know, they're put in that situation because Obama refuses to provide the necessary standard of proof initially. And so I don't know. It's unfortunate that, and yet, you know, the military, if you're the reported, if you're their commander-in-chief, you know, and you're sending people overseas and you deploy them, and in fact your orders to deploy say you must bring your birth certificate, and you must bring your birth certificate to gain access to the Pentagon, but evidently you don't have to have that to order people to deploy or to send many to harm's way, it is discouraging.
And from your discussions with Terry, if you can share with us, I mean, has it been absolute shunning him for asking this question? Because everybody's implicated. This is a serious question. And even, you know, even at the basic piece, and I think I mentioned this to you earlier, nobody can get into the Pentagon or wherever with an electronic copy of their, you know, of a certification of live birth. How would it be if Lieutenant Colonel Lakin, on his way to deployment, just took his computer and opened up his computer screen and showed it to the Pentagon and said, here, this is a certified copy of, you know, certification of live birth. Could he get into the Pentagon with that? So it would seem just, you know, with the military and its, you know, and its emphasis on exactness and detail and, you know, et cetera, structure and so forth, that even that would raise eyebrows. But is the intimidation that great? Or is it just absolute head in the sand? Or is it orders?
You know, it's interesting to see all this. At first I thought that what I've been seeing is that many of the command seem like they are very, while they put on a tough showing, they're fearful of retribution, almost like a McChrystal type of fear. I mean, they've seen what can happen. And so I think the ones in active duty are. And then once they retire, I know of five retired generals so far that have really taken a stand on Lieutenant Colonel Terry's, you know, behalf, and feel strongly that he's representing his country well. But those in active duty are scared, and Terry doesn't want to. At the same time, he doesn't want to this to be disruptive to the Army. It's that's not his intent. But his intent is to get some answers for everybody, and that's all he wants. It's the truth. It's the truth. You know, if it's either way, and he is packed up and ready to go. I mean, he'll go back to Afghanistan. He's reassured people that, you know, if Obama was to provide proof, you know, with the Army willing, he'd head back overseas again. You know, and people need to realize that this is a tremendous act, in my opinion, and this is my opinion, a tremendous act of courage. I mean, he's put his career and his family's welfare and his career on the line, and he's received threats. You know, at the same time, it's not like he's an Army flight surgeon. I mean, he's not on the front lines where bullets are flying. He's in Afghanistan. He's back at the, you know, at the aircraft base, making sure pilots are, you know, in top form, that their crews are able to handle the duties they need to handle. I mean, he's taking on more risk, in my opinion, in many respects, now than he would have been just towing the line and going overseas once again. But he's been like that all his life. He's been very principled. What's right is right, and what's wrong is wrong. And he's always had this, always felt that the truth is going to come out eventually and prevail. And I hate to, you know, I hope he's correct.
Me too. And so you raised McChrystal, you know, as an example, and it would seem, you know, there are lots of ways for the military, the Army, to have handled this, and one of which was to just say, you know, would you go away, please? You know, you don't have to throw him in Leavenworth, you know, and you don't have to trump up charges, basically. And I wanted to ask you, we had spoken a little bit about you know, the Judge Lynn's decision to throw out everything and to look at, you know, to say that the birth certificate would be embarrassing. And since you have practiced law, I know, you know, you may not know the military code of justice and all that, but what do you think of that decision as an attorney? Is that reversible error? What is that? Or is that part of breaking the chain of command?
Oh, I completely agree. I think that is a reversible error. I think when you, you know, just put convenience, put what was another word that she used? It could be embarrassing, I think.
Embarrassing.
One of those
things.
When you're worried about embarrassing somebody as opposed to, you know, putting them, taking them away from their family and putting them in prison at hard labor for many years. I mean, I would have to think you'd have, you know, this was a job requirement that Obama had. I mean, an absolute job requirement. right. is to be a natural born citizen. So this is something that you would normally turn in, you know, to get the job. I mean, he knew before he applied for the job that this would be a requirement, and yet it slipped through probably by design. So, but if I was a judge, you know, and when I was a prosecuting attorney, I wanted to make sure that somebody was, I wanted to know in my heart of hearts that I was doing the right thing, that somebody was truly guilty, that we bent over backwards to make sure that there wasn't error, that we didn't put an innocent person away, that that the evidence was actually sound, that the truth actually prevailed. And those are the kind of things that I think were essentially swept under the rug to avoid, you know, potential embarrassment, either to the Army or to the President or who knows who. But it was discouraging. The motion hearing was discouraging.
Totally. And again, this it kind of parallels, which just indicates to me the depth of this deception. Frankly, just indicates to me, you know, how serious it is. It's Occam's razor. What is the chance that Obama is hiding documents that are benign? Well, $2.5 million later, and the whole government behind you. What do you think? You know, there's either no document, or it basically just proves him not, you know, at least from that angle. I am curious. I am curious whether even within the, and I apologize because it's you're civilian, not military, but I'm curious if those errors could be remedied or overturned. I mean, I don't know if it felt to me deliberate, but on the other hand, they are in control. And, you know, can her decisions be reviewed?
Oh, I am sure that they can. And mm-hmm. You know, that would be a hope of ours, is that, you know, you can't hide behind you know, one thing I've learned is on a case-by-case basis, justice won't necessarily prevail. You hope that the general theme of legal issues, that there's a general sense of justice. But, you know, a judge can go in there with a predetermined idea of what kind of ruling they want, and they can look at all the different various case laws supporting one side or the other, and spin them in a way that supports their conclusion, and that's just what happens. And so that's probably what was done here. The code used for the fighting man, which is different from the military administrative code of conduct, is different, and so their officers are allowed a little more discretion in upholding, you know, lawful orders and or not. And so there's some thought that maybe the wrong uniform military codes were perhaps relied upon, but I guess we'll find out.
You know, and if it was and is intentional reversible error, it would seem to me, regardless of how much they're trying to hide it, that's a damaging item to one's career. You know, to come up with a decision like that, you know, Judge Lind, military officer, you know, I don't know if in the civilian side people get sanctioned for doing things like that. I know there are frivolous lawsuits and you get sanctioned for that, but a decision that's wholly, you know, intentionally reversible, I don't know if you can get sanctioned for that.
Right. And yet, which was the easier way out for her? You know, really, a ruling that may upset the status quo and throw us in a position where the military and the Congress, perhaps, or the Supreme Court actually has to address the issue, or just... you know, put a guy away. that has done nothing wrong other than ask for the truth.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's amazing, because what it will do, guaranteed, if Lieutenant Colonel Lakin is convicted, it's going to ignite the country. That's it. And, you know, in a lot of ways, not to revolution, but it's going to be absolutely everyone on Congress's, you know, doorstep until this thing is fixed. Also, I mean, we're at this point right now where we hope the Supreme Court does the right thing and upholds the Constitution. And, you know, the Apuzzo case, when you take a look at that, the Kirchner case, I think you will very much appreciate the legal materials that went behind and into it. It's just a superb case. Speaking as a non-lawyer, of course, but I've learned quite a lot from it. And so if there is a grant of the petition for writ, then again, that would allow, you know, the military to put it in the Supreme Court. And also, and if the Supreme Court doesn't take it, then it's Congress is our next step, and that intervention. So hopefully even December 14th and 15th, sir, you know, it's not a final, it's not a decision. It's a stay pending review. It's a postponement. I don't know if there can be any more postponements, you know, in the trial or whatnot. Can you provide any insight into that? I'm just one, you know, lonely and cold hydrologist up here in North Dakota. Give me some insight here.
God bless you up there. No, you know, I know that they could postpone this, you know, for any reason whatsoever. You know, and so, you know, the hope is that if they want to see, are truly interested in justice and finding the truth and you know, once and for all making these issues go away, they're going to have to address it on a larger level. So I agree with you. Let the Supreme Court do their job now. They're supposed to protect the little guy, and they're supposed to make sure that things like this don't happen. And yet, you know, they're so polarized or politicized right now that I don't believe they're the Supreme Court of old. You know, the Supreme Court of old probably would have taken this issue on long ago. And Congress, again, is so polarized that anybody that brings up any issue along these lines with regard to the president and his eligibility, it's automatically deemed to be just, you know, a political maneuver. And so,
or racist, or, you know, just ridiculous.
Race, right.
And the fact that we have all hung in, and the fact that there are people like Terry standing up, just absolutely means this issue is not going away. And ask anybody who can be labeled a birther if this is about race, and they will all tell you, no, this is about national security and our Constitution, and this is really dangerous. You know, we just had a missile fired off the coast of California, another one fired off the coast on the East Coast. What's going on? There are subs patrolling the waters, and, you know, we have somebody using the vast resources of that office to basically not even produce a document that, you know, is like that. So I see, just sort of cycling back a little bit, that for Judge Lynn, there are probably some career considerations for her in terms of whether she could move or not. But hopefully the larger issue can be seen, and hopefully they take notice. I think I told you, but I just wanted to repeat for both the audience and others, is in the petition for writ of certiorari submitted by Mario Puzo on behalf of Commander Kirchner, they asked the Supreme Court to take notice of the affidavit submitted in Colonel Lakin's case, Lieutenant Colonel Lakin's case, by General McKerny. Did you see that?
It was very well done, very well done.
Oh, my goodness. And one of the reasons they are arguing, you know, they presented four questions before the Supreme Court and then listed a host of reasons of why the Supreme Court should take this issue. And one of those was essentially our national security and the chain of command. that there has to be security. There has to be certainty in the chain of command. And so citing not only that affidavit, but Lieutenant Colonel Lakin's case, I hope when that reaches, sees the judge's eyes, that they will see that this is really big. This is not, quote unquote, a bunch of birthers. You know, we are constitutionalists, and there are people who are risking their lives every day. And what alarms me is all the lower courts, you know, dismissing everything based on standing, and, you know, this tremendous delay. You know, how many of those troops that were sent over under his direct order have been killed? And what is the consequence then of an ineligible commander-in-chief sending people into war? That is really very serious. And you can see why, in my view, why they're going after Terry so hard and why they've ridiculed everybody who's been on this so hard, because it is really serious. And, you know, I just don't know. I mean, do you get that seriousness as well? If, what do people in your circle talk with you about? What do you hear?
People are starting to realize that this is a serious issue. I think the recent elections told us that. It takes people a little while to ask the right questions, and to be honest with you, in this current regime's initial, we were all, you know, everybody's excited to see all this change, and you're right, Obama is very good at deflecting true issues. You know, it's political deflection 101. So you're right when he belittles them, and then, you know, the Tea Parties get made fun of, and anybody that challenges him on anything, you know, and it's demeaning comments after one after another, and then after a while, you start meeting birthers, and you realize they really are very intelligent. They've got real issues that need to be addressed. I've met many Tea Party people, and they are hardworking people with real issues that need to be addressed, and so. It's unfair that they're put down, or that they're even, in fact, to me, they're the true patriots. To me, that, you know, people that take a stand like this is what's needed. And those that, some of Obama's comments, I think, are coming back to haunt him. He belittles these people in his little partisan political crowd, and he gets laughs. But the people that he makes fun of, don't forget. And then those of us sitting in the sidelines, realize that this is the mark of a bully, and that this is a mark of somebody trying to perhaps hide the facts. And so now the general public and the moderates, or whatever you want to call them, are starting to decide and realize that quit ducking the issue. Quit ducking the issue, and let's talk about some serious issues here that need to be addressed. So, you know, what was he? I think he said to Matt Lauer the other day, Obama said, "What do I got to do? Paste my birth certificate to my forehead and wear it around?" It's like, no, why don't you just try showing it one time? I mean,
it would be a relief if you pasted it on there. At least we'd know you had it.
right. And, you know, Terry, Lieutenant Colonel Lakin, he was an Army officer at Schofield Barracks. He's seen many Hawaiian birth certificates. His child was born in Hawaii. He's signed off on and delivered, you know, many, many babies. Not, I don't believe, in Hawaii, but he's signed many a birth certificate. He knows what they look like, and he knows what they don't look like. So it's not like he's, he knows what's legitimate and what's not. And so, you know, it's unfortunate Obama treats us, I feel like we're idiots in a way, by claiming that, you know, he's got to wear his birth certificate on his forehead. He knows what this is about. Obama is a very intelligent man, and he knows exactly what this is about. He's an after reflection.
Yes, and, you know, come to find out, all of us who've just been so tormented by this for a couple of years have done all the research and found out that, you know, the idea of, you know, that anyone who questions him is a racist, you know, is clearly a tactic. And it worked for a while. And, you know, the other just brazen installing somebody like this in the White House is, you know, maybe it was the right time because people felt that Americans would be too afraid to, you know, bring this issue up, and so the tactics have come on and the destruction of people on this. But listen, you know, I'm, you know, thanks to God, you know, still alive, and I've been writing about this for 2.5 years. I'm telling you, I'm sick of it because it's like, get over it already. So
you're right.
So this
right about
tactic.
That. Everybody that
and then
that
we all end up. Then
issue.
We all end up. Yeah. Then we all end up on Janet Napolitano's Homeland Security list, and then we get, you know, these quote unquote, you know, liberal organizations, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, listing all the Tea Party members as absolute white racist bigots, you know, threat to national security, and. This has been going on, and now what we have experienced, in my view, in the last couple of years is people who have been concerned about this is exactly what Americans are going through in airport security right now, is, you know, they're just touching everywhere, you know, conditioning us to get used to basically ignoring the law. And, you know, I think sort of to go off on a little non sequitur, but I don't know about the radiation characteristics of those things. You know, I don't know if the, you know, pat downs are just basically to get everybody irradiated, and, you know, we all end up with a bad case of cancer. So, you know, please disavow me of that view.
Well, no, you know, the CTs, we were getting a little carried away with these, you know, 24 slice CTs or 64 slice CTs. I think was all the rage there, and now they've realized we really. We're starting to over-radiate people, so now they have low-dose CTs. And, so you're right in some of that, some of these diagnostic equipment. You know, I don't know specifically what kind of radiation exposure you get, but certainly we were we're finding out that it's certainly more than we thought originally with regard to some of these other diagnostic instruments. But, yeah. One thing
it's just invasive, dehumanizing, you know, and ultimately unhealthy. And, you know, they're just everything that's being done right now in my view is just very much an assault on our rights. And you know, before we even know it, there's something else going on. And so this goes back, in my view, to the eligibility. Now, one of the reasons I started the usurpathon, and many of us came to this same conclusion, which is basically a marathon. We're going to work on this until this guy is out of there. Is because I got sick of getting these, you know, petitions over the email, sign this and oppose that and do this and do that, when very simply the guy's ineligible. And, you know, he should never have gotten there in the first place. And we can now name names. We know who did this, you know, in terms of who monkeyed with the paperwork and so forth. So he's got a handful of people, which is why the Kirshner and Obama case is going on. Let me just break in here for just a little bit. Let me look in our chat room. Great. If anyone has a question, please call in. And if it's below freezing, yeah, it's like really cold in North Dakota today, by the way. So I'm going to play part of an interview with Commander Kirshner and Mario Puzo, and this goes to the question I was asking you, Greg. I feel like calling you Dr. Megan. May I call you Greg?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, great, great. But this goes to maybe the new political environment might give people more cover to deal with this issue. And, you know, certainly that might go to the military as well. So I'm going to play this, and let me see what you think about it. I think it's only about only a few minutes. Here we go. Well, I always have this again. Thank you. Welcome back to Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate on the line with our guests, Commander Charles Kirshner and Attorney Mario Puzo. Thank you very much for hanging in there. We have three callers on the line. First is Jack. Jack, I'm going to unmute you. There you go. Go ahead.
Okay.
Live mic, Jack.
Yeah, hi. I've called before. In fact, I talked to Dr. Kate a couple years ago, back at the beginning of the Obama administration, in the context of the other cases that were going on. And I want to say, first of all, Commander Kirshner and Mr. Apuzzo, you guys are great. I mean, people have so much to thank for what you're doing. And it's funny, I'm sitting here listening to this thing on the Internet, and whatever, I don't know how many people are listening, 20, 30 people, and to think that this is so important to the United States of America, this should be front page banner news, and the fact that it's kind of relegated to this where only a few people are listening, it's really sad. It's like David versus Goliath. But what I wanted to ask you about specifically is, look, clearly you guys got the law, you explained the law, you got the law, and at least you passed the purple face test of on the merits, and certainly on standing, if they want to find it, they can find it. So the real thing here is really, really political. And if you can, it's like what I kind of want to know is what your feeling is in view of the fact that there now is a Republican Congress, and the courts would be under a different, not have the same pressures that they would at the beginning of the Obama administration, at which time, if they would have attempted to question his eligibility at that time, it would have caused riots in the streets. But where Obama stands politically now, it's almost to the point that if the court doesn't do anything and this question keeps getting raised louder and louder, there'll be riots in the streets the other way. And I guess what I'm looking at is what kind of plans or what kind of communications are going out to the court and elsewhere that if the court does not take this case, what that means, because basically it says that our judicial system has failed and it's people to take into the streets then. And if you could somehow discuss the politics of this,
well,
thing,
let me,
what your feeling
let
is.
Let me answer your question, maybe, unless Tamara, you want to take it or you want me to take it.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Charlie, and then I'll just add something to it.
I think that we've given the legal system the best prepared case, the best argued case, the most judicially ripe case that's come up so far. If they pass on this one, the legal system has totally failed. We don't have a rule of law left in our country. And after that, Mario and I have done everything we can do in the legal system and the people who have supported us. After that, it's up to we, the people. And all I will say, I will requote John F. Kennedy, those who make peaceful, paraphrasing, make peaceful resolution impossible, make violent resolution inevitable. And whatever comes after this, they caused it. The Obama progressives, doing what they did, caused it. They allowed the system that has worked for 234 years to fall apart. They have allowed the glue of our Constitution to be dissolved by ignoring it, by usurping it, by taking, in particular, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 5, and saying it means nothing to us. Anybody can virtually, you know, you have congressmen saying you don't even have to be born in the USA to be the president. I mean, they're just so, let alone the other half, which is being of two American citizen parents. So it's beginning to be absurd what the progressives are doing. And we will have tried. And as far as what comes after, that's up to we, the people. We're not going to hear it tonight and say and predict. But it's up to we, the people. And we cannot be intimidated by threats of violence from anybody. And the court system is acting under intimidation because they think a few people in the inner cities are going to riot. God, what's happened to us? What has happened to our country if intimidation and threats of violence are keeping this court from doing what is right? I don't believe that the vast majority of the innuendos of, oh, the blacks will riot, whatever, because he was, quote, the first black president. I don't believe the vast majority of American blacks would riot, because if it was ruled that the Constitution is being enforced and he's not constitutionally eligible, how can you riot against the Constitution? And certainly our oath keepers and takers and military would stand up to support the Constitution. So I can't believe that I think it was more of the political winds that the court was reacting to, and they have changed. It's going to give them a little more cover to be more courageous. But we have never been to the Supreme Court before with a case this well-prepared that was judicially ripe. The prior cases were either writs of mandamus to stop the election, and one other writ of certiorari was applied for, but they skipped the appeals court in that particular case. Maybe Mario can fill in more on that, but this is the first case that's really, really judicially ripe and properly prepared and presented all the way. No steps were skipped, and it wasn't filed too soon, and it wasn't filed too late.
Yeah, I'd like to add that when we talk about the political aspect here, we're really taking a risk by not having a natural-born citizen be the president. Now, what does that mean? That means that Mr. Obama, you know, he talked about change, and we've seen some of his change already. We've seen some of it. We don't know what's in store, what other change is in store, okay? Now, there's some big flags right now. Look at the health care. Look at the automotive industry, the banking. Okay.
Look at the lack of defense of our southern border. He does not want to put resources down to protect the sovereignty of our nation.
How he's approaching the internationally, how he's approaching that. Not protecting again, you know, on the immigration aspect.
He pulled the missile defense out of Poland with no compromise from Russia on the other side. He just pulled out the missiles arbitrarily.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, we could talk a lot about the politics, but that's what's involved here by not having a natural born citizen, is that this person does certain things or does not do certain things, and you don't know where it could lead you. Okay, and that's in the future. So if the court doesn't do anything, that means that we still have this person as the president, and we don't know. No, he could just, you know, finish out these 2 years, not run again, or he could, you know, say, hey, I got 2 more years, then I'm going to run again, and just keep building and building and building a network, okay, planting roots, planting institutions of change. Okay,
Bars.
A change of what?
Bars.
Changing the American values. Changing, you know, if this individual has a certain mindset that America is evil, it is the product of conquest and of exploitation of other
people. Not even if he's an evil Maru, but he's a citizen of the world. If he thinks that we shouldn't be a sovereign nation anymore and should just be part of this great world order that he wants to impose on us, that's not what America's about. That's not America's dream.
Yeah, so... So it's very, very risky as to what could happen. So, again, you know, people many times think that we've arrived, okay? In other words, nothing else is going to change for the worse because we've experienced all the bad things already, okay? Well, the war has already happened and all this, you know, the plague already happened and all these different things. But society continues. The world continues. And anything can happen at any moment, even 9/11. Okay. Now, who would have thought that was a beautiful day? I remember that day. The sky was blue. It was a beautiful, clear day. And all of a sudden, we have this major catastrophe that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or think about an earthquake or a hurricane or you know, a tsunami destroying like half a country or something.
Loss of liberty, though, Mario. Look at history. Those that do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Look at creeping loss of liberty in Italy and Germany. Look at where that led to. The National Socialist movements over there taking away individual liberties led us to a disaster, and 50 million people died over there because of it in the war.
Oh, and when you think about Hitler coming to power. Okay.
Slowly, right.
I'm sorry?
That's right.
Yes, you're right. Slowly, the liberties were taken away.
Right. And then look at the impact. Okay, so those are the risks that a society takes. And one person can be the catalyst of that. Again, you know, I mean, Hitler is a and I'm, you know, I'm not beating up on Hitler, you know, but I'm making a point. I'm making a point that one person can have a tremendous impact on what happens in the world, and that's the risk that you take here by not having a person there who's not qualified based on the founding fathers who went through a revolution. They experienced what allegiance was. They know the impact that allegiance can have on whether you win or whether you lose, whether you preserve your way of life or you become a slave to someone else. They personally experienced that. So that's the risk that we're looking at here.
Look at what Obama did when Honduran people wanted to protect their constitution. And they wanted to throw out a president who wanted to be stay president for life and wouldn't leave at the end of his term. The Constitution was enforced by the Supreme Court down there and their Congress down there. And who did Obama side with? Hugo Chavez, Ortega, and Chavez from Venezuela against the Constitution of Honduras. He sided with dictators.
Well, what'd you think about that?
That was very, very, very informative, wasn't it? Interesting.
Yeah. I think the main points there are risk. And this is what I understand as well is the same kind that motivated Terry, underlying love for country, love of the military, but the risk of not having an eligible commander-in-chief is serious. So that must have weighed into that.
Oh, it did. No, he's, you know, when you go into the military, you know, you know that you're willing to sacrifice your life for your country, and so this is just an extension of that. Really, he thinks that it is such an important issue, you know, to make sure that, you know, the most powerful man in the world is actually held accountable and actually qualified to hold the position.
I want to check something with you, and I guess it's more on a personal level because I used to be a very staunch Democrat and just completely have dropped all of that. I'm unaffiliated right now, but I have to admit that my view of Obama is not only that he is ineligible, but he's public enemy number one. You know, I'm saying this just my view. Because of the changes that I see happening. Now, our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence says, you know, no government should be overthrown for frivolous reasons. And the Fourth Amendment, or the Article 4, Section 4, guarantees to every state a republican form of government. And we have an amendment process, Article 5 Amendment, if we want to move towards socialism or if we want to change these various systems. And so when I look at what has happened with someone who, in my view, is a foreigner, and since I've written about him quite a bit, I really see his Marxist background. I don't like what I see, but it is, I would say, in one word, it's anti-American. In fact, that's the one thing that got me into researching Obama in 2008, was like, how come he really doesn't like America? I mean, what is this? And my background research led me all the way to this point, and I see it as a danger. Now, you know, I live where I live, and I try to keep up on things, and I've looked at all the stories and write about it and so forth, and I'm scared. And I wonder, since you said you were a quote-unquote extreme moderate, is there a reality check there? Do you see any kind of similar dangers in terms of large-scale takeover, large-scale things that you see happening that people should be, that don't seem right, quote-unquote right, in terms of our country to you? Or am I truly a right-wing, you know, person?
No, no, you know, we're certainly on Napolitano's
list.
We're certainly concerned about, you know, Obamacare and the health care issue, you know. And originally, you know, what we have, you know, we all, I think most providers and Democrats and Republicans alike think that people should have, you know, everybody should have access to health care and quality health care. You know, once again, the idea of how to get there is what we differ in. And Obamacare, I think, is not only setting us up for failure, and this is my opinion, but, you know, pretty soon healthcare providers are going to be painted as the bad guy. I can just see what's in our future. You know, they did not pass any form of tort reform whatsoever. You know, we practice defensive medicine all the time. You know, healthcare costs are ever raising, even though reimbursements are going down for everybody. But most of that is because a lot of the payers invested poorly. They invested in the market too. You know, I'm talking about different insurance companies invested in the market and lost a lot of that money in the market. Medicare monies have been all spent. You know, Medicaid monies were utilized excessively, and so and again, you know, no tort reform whatsoever. So we have to continue to practice defensive medicine for fear of being sued. There's a zillion former attorneys out there, a zillion attorneys out there that wish to, you know, that are starving, you know, so I just think it's destined to fail, and the only way you can make people buy into the socialistic type of healthcare is to demonize healthcare providers. You know, pretty soon it'll be our fault that the monies are dried up, or that when it's government mismanagement. I've never seen a federal program that's ever worked, you know, and so. And I think our AMA and some of those other agencies that are supposed to be our lobbyists, I think they jumped on board initially thinking the cause was just, but then as time moved on and it started taking a different direction, they're starting to... It's kind of like that movie, remember the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas, and he started to fight back against street gangs and those, and we were all on board, and as you followed him, he got more bizarre and more extreme, and pretty soon you felt kind of dirty for signing up, but you were and I think that's the way it is with many of our medical lobbying agencies and stuff is they initially signed up for the good cause, but as they see how it's being manipulated, they're starting to have concerns. And so, do you stay involved and try to make change from within, or do you break away and say you were wrong? You know, it's a tough call.
Very interesting. I have a brother who's a physician who I believe is, you know, right up in there in the AMA area, management or leadership, I'm not sure, and a brother-in-law who's a physician, and a nephew who's a physician. And all of them are saying the same thing. It's death to America, and my sister's a nurse. Death is death. It's going to get worse. And I found it interesting, you know, there are the lawsuits that are out there. And the first lawsuit that came out against the government, Obamacare, I have two stories here on that. One, it was out of Florida, and, of course, what was the argument that Elena Kagan made as Solicitor General was that Florida didn't have standing to raise the issue. Interesting, yeah?
Right.
Because this follows along with the whole way, this questioning of the Constitution and Obama's eligibility has given is there's not standing. But in any case, that case is moving along, including, I think, the entry of somebody's brief that said that the law is illegal because Obama's illegal. But I found it interesting that there is a tactic by the Republicans to join the lawsuit, and maybe they're also pursuing a legislative piece, I'm sure they will, but to join the lawsuit as well in insisting that that is unconstitutional. You know, as a person who's struggled with getting health care myself and with the physicians in my family, yeah, tort reform for me, let me buy health insurance across state lines and, you know, go easy on the pre-existing conditions, for heaven's sakes. You know, the older you get, the more pre-existing conditions you have. But in any case... the whole effort to reform healthcare was not aimed at really reforming healthcare. And you used a particular word, which I find is interesting, which is part of the strategy, and that is to demonize somebody. That's one of the Alinsky rules, is you pick a target, you isolate it, and you demonize it. So, yes, it would seem to me that on healthcare or Obamacare, because who doesn't want healthcare? Let's call it Obamacare. That will demonize physicians, and people are going out of business, will go out of business and refuse. And that's, I can see that going everywhere. So, see something like healthcare or Obamacare to the Tea Parties also became constitutional. Those of us who are concerned about Obama just related it again to Obama's ineligibility. And the Republicans could take 25 years to try to undo the damage, or we could move to get this guy out of office, rule him ineligible, and to have these things fall by that. Even the whole process, see, again, I'm telling you, I admit I've got a tinfoil hat on. We are in such trouble. And, you know, the canaries in the coal mine, Kirchner, Terry, Lieutenant Colonel Lakin, these are the signs that, you know, we are cooked or we might have a chance. The health care, the banking, and so forth, these are totally against Article 4, Section 4. They're totally against the Constitution. And whenever we say anything, we're demonized. So I am grateful, you know, we're on the eve of Thanksgiving, that we had the election that we did. It's not perfect, and it hasn't given us that amount of breathing room, but for heaven's sakes, it gives us a chance to actually make some moves. So in that regard, with all my chattering and Kirchner's and Apuzzo's statements, what would be your next step, or what would you recommend all of us anxious listeners out here do if, for example, the Kirchner case is not taken?
You know, that's it's hard to know what to support. Terry, I think, would be, you know, is where my heart is, and that's
yes,
you know, by getting a hold of our congressmen, whether they be new incoming congressmen or current congressmen, and just contacting them and you know, advising them about Terry's case. And really, you have to. The only way that I think that we can be sure that he gets a fair fair treatment is to watch it, you know, and to make sure that everybody that's involved in it is accountable. And so, and then, you know, he's there's different websites that are supportive and will keep people up to date on his case, and I believe is that SaveOurConstitution.com, and
yeah,
another website that healthcare providers are following is the American Association of Physicians and Surgeons, with regard to some of the lawsuits with Obamacare. You know, there's I think on SaveOurConstitution.com. You can put some money toward helping Terry with his defense attorney, if inclined. I plan on being there, I have many people to report to with regard to how his trial or hearing progresses and what becomes of it. So.
Excellent. So for our listeners out there, if you can make it to the hearing, it's going to be in Fort Meade, December 14th and 15th. I'm going over there. I know my two colleagues from the Usurpathon on are, you are, Greg, and so that's going to be very good. One question before I ask you another one, and is there a link to support Terry's family? or will there be in case the worst happens, in terms of making sure that she is taken, she and his children are taken care of?
Right. He does have three little kids. And they're very supportive, but again, this could mean many years, you know, worst case scenario. But I believe that SaveThatConstitution.com, you can dictate where you want the monies to go, whether it's for his defense or for his family. I believe that's the case, although he was looking at getting a trust or something along those lines so that they'd be cared for when he was potentially away from them. So.
Well, we are not putting any energy out there that that's going to happen, because we're going to get this delayed one way or another. And, you know, something's going to happen. But, you know, I want everyone to know out there that, you know, this man is standing for us, and we really need to come to the aid of him. He's defended us. There's no reason why we can't defend him. And move forward that way. Now, you mentioned his attorney. We all know that he has a new attorney. I think there may have been one or two people who've been able to talk with him. I'm just not interfering and, you know, don't have access. But I know it's very important for our audience out there, and I know you can't share legal details and probably don't know many anyway, because it's a very much of a, you know, between Terry and his attorney. But it's very much of concern to those of us out there that that his defense attorney is aware of the Kirchner case and is aware of the status of that, and that his Lieutenant Colonel Lakin's case has been mentioned in the Kirchner case. Is there anything you can share on the extent to which Terry's attorney is aware of how many of us out there are rooting for Terry, and the tons of material we have, as well as the Kirchner case? Is there anything light you can share on that for our listening audience?
Well, I know that his attorney is aware of the Kirchner case and his potential meaning for Terry's case. I know that he's well aware of that. I know that you know that supposedly happened today, and I, with regard to the review of that, and so and the question is, like you stated earlier, Kate, is a little bit about timing. You know, what is it going to be in time to help Terry, or is Terry's case going to prevail? It's hard to predict. Really, I know that even the military is a very political animal. They're very concerned about public opinion. They act like they're not, but they really are. And so, anything that can be used to show support for Terry is going to have influence. I'm sure of that. And,
Very good. I wrote a post a while back called "Terrorists Have More Rights Than Lieutenant Colonel Lakin," which they do right now. And so is that what you're talking about? Because, you know, many of us don't know about how we approach the Pentagon, how we make things, you know, come before their eyes. I've tweeted every post that I have to, you know, the hashtags for military and so forth, but... any other tips you have on making the military aware of what a disaster this could be? I mean, for myself, you know, I would advise, for example, you know, talk with young kids. You really want to go into the military. This could affect recruitment, et cetera, et cetera. How far can we go? What would you suggest? What do you have in mind?
You know, I'm open for suggestions. I really am. I am. Mm-hmm. My other brother is in the military, but I don't know the military. I do know that you know, Terry's had other active duty people approach him and want to sign on board, and Terry's like, no, I'll carry the flag on this one. You know, I don't want to upset the military process. for active duty people. However, those that are retired, those that are you know, have much more freedom and still have influence. You know, we talked about the many generals and that have the experience and see the potential risk that we're under with our current leadership. And so I would encourage the retired military to get involved. I would encourage any other agency to get involved and let us know how to accomplish this. I have not been through anything like this before, and certainly Terry has never, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I personally would like to see, you're familiar with the National Press Club, you know, I would like to see a National Press Club conference with these generals, retired generals, really standing up and saying so, you know, because you can imagine Terry has a lot of courage to do this. You know, it's not like anyone else would do it in the military. I'm sure there are, but there are a lot of people who are extremely intimidated and can't and wouldn't, and have those questions. So I would love to see, you know, and hoping that there are some retired military out there listening, let's do a press conference, you know, hopefully right before the court-martial hearing, because it needs to be brought up. You know, like the media have ignored, the eligibility issue, they've completely ignored this issue, but given all the attention to terrorists and everybody else who's having something, I'm so disturbed by this. I can hardly deal with it. So let me see. You know, I know you probably have other things to do this evening. It is 9:15 or so. Let me check in the chat room there. Hi, Gulag, guest Jan, Jay Duby, Oscara, hello, nice to see you. Paleo, Sang, Tenacity, nice to see you here. UPS, very good. I bet you you're in the banana belt there, fellow person who lives in cold climes. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions that you have? Okay, let me see. You know, what I'm going to do is just ask you if you would like to say anything more or hang on the line more, chat, have some other issues you might want to discuss or share about Terry.
What are some other issues? I can tell you that he's doing it for all the right reasons. I can tell he's always been headstrong and principled. You know, I don't know why this is, you know, and I'm thinking of it from a very simplistic view, but you have to ask yourself the question that there's been numerous opportunities when Obama could have clarified all this and has never chosen to do so, and so you have to ask yourself why that is, I just hope that the truth will eventually come to the forefront. But you know, it needs to be sooner rather than later. And so maybe the current or the upcoming Congress will address the issue rather than worry so much about whether baseball players have taken steroids and lied or things of that ilk.
Well, we, you know, there's an army out there of us ready to march. And, you know, I'm glad we talked a little bit about Obamacare as well, because we're all right there. But you can see how we see it, is that it's related to ineligibility, and that if we can knock it out there, we can really begin to rebuild and stop any of this from going through. We have to provide a lot of avenues. And all of us participated in Terry Lakin Week, and we're still going to be there. And so I want to, first of all, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Sure.
And
thank you for having me.
What you can, and I also want to just thank you for being you and being Terry's bro, his brother, and the support that you've enabled him. And if Terry is out there, of course, our greatest thanks, gratitude, respect, admiration, you know, real gratitude and thanks for all of your work, because this is Thanksgiving Eve as well, and I know I'm going to be lighting several candles for you tomorrow as you're out there. And thanks to all of the members of our armed services. Standing up the way you are, I've always been proud to be an American, but I've never been prouder to know Terry and, you know, to have met I haven't met Commander Kirshner, but to have been involved in all this effort. And for all the people who are listening out there who are so passionately concerned about this, on behalf of those, if they will allow me, I would like to say thank you as well. And thank you to Terry Lakin and Commander Kirshner, all of our retired and active military. And if you would like to say anything more, would really invite you to. Our prayers are with you, with Terry and our family and your family. And let me ask if you would like to share any more. And otherwise, just thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Kate. I appreciate you having me on and supporting Terry and all that you've done for him. And I understand that you know quite a few people up there and on the Hill even. Your opinion and your resolve carries a lot of weight. So.
Well, I want to thank you again, and I look forward to meeting you in December, and we hope it'll be under really terrific circumstances. And if you get any calls from anyone or any ideas for military to do a press release or to really get some media coverage there, please let us know. We'll spread the words as quickly as we can. Thank you so much for coming. If you can, stay on the line. We have just about another 20 minutes to go, and we'll be playing some music. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Okay. Everyone, we're going to take just a short break. The song I'm going to play is Soweto Blues by Miriam Makeba. As you know, just a fighter for African rights. We are facing some of the same things that's going on right now. You know, Big Brother is telling us we can't grow this, we can't do that. You know, I can't believe I'm even speaking like this. But enjoy this song. It's about 5 minutes. We'll be back. Go get your best beverage, and then I've got just a couple things I'd like to say. Thanks so much, and here we go.
Here's a song that was written for us by Hugh Masekela. He calls it Soweto Blues.
The children got a letter from their mother. It said no more Tosa, Tutu, no more Zulu. Refusing to comply, they sent an answer. That's when the policeman came to the rescue. Children were flying, bullets dying. The mother screaming and crying. Evening.
And to all those heroes out there who have really worked with their country. This is a really amazing time. I have to tell you, I just don't know if I'm going to sleep again. Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lagan's life on the line, his family on the line. We're going to have to be there to support him. I think whatever works for him is got to work here. I pray that the Supreme Court does the right thing. And, you know, it doesn't end. We hope that when Obama goes, we'll have people like Pelosi fall down the way because, of course, she was instrumental in this. I find it interesting that Ulsterman is, you know, the White House insider is talking about Pelosi threatening to use Obama's certification papers as a reason, you know, for her to maintain the minority leader. Well, hello. I personally think that if Nancy Pelosi wants to save her skin, she needs to turn state's evidence because the information she has in her hands directly implicates her. She could be just as easily charged with treason and sedition as Barack Obama. And, you know, can you commit treason if you're not a U.S. citizen? I'm not sure. Certainly Nancy Pelosi did, as well as everyone else who covered this thing up. And it's been a long time. You know, how about George W. Bush? How about Dick Cheney, who is included as one of the people in the Kirchner suit for violating our rights by not ensuring this? What's going on here? What do we have on the Supreme Court with George Bush Sr. and Jr., you know, or Junior appointing Alito and Junior appointing Roberts. What do we have on that? Will the Supreme Court, as one of my readers said, choose to destroy the court and the nation, or will they choose to out a usurper, a dangerous usurper, and help us get our lives back on track? We are very much more informed now. This is nothing the New World Order planned. We are very much more informed about who and why and how and targets. We can hear their language. We know when this is going on. We're not fooled anymore by the Alinsky tactics. We know they're trying to overload the system. We know the Muslim Brotherhood is are people who really want to destroy us, originated in Egypt, precursor and founder of Al-Qaeda. We know that CAIR, the Council on Arab Islamic American Islamic Relations, I don't know exactly what that is, but that they are now officially unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land case, which is good. They are linked with Hamas. So gradually we are exposing these organizations. So once we begin to undo Mr. Obama, many, many threads are there, and this is why it has been so fierce. This is why people have lost their lives, why they've been ruined financially, disregarded, while whole swaths of the American population have been put on the watch list, on the Homeland Security list of domestic terrorists. This is how big this is. New World Order? No, you didn't expect us to find this out, but we did. And, the cat's out in the bag, and it's, you can run, but you can't hide anymore. So I want to bring you back by playing you this very old speech, which was given just a couple of days before he was assassinated. And see if it doesn't remind you of where we are today and what we have, we may have just scratched the surface. We don't know everything. But we do know that it's under 500 people who are controlling this mess in the world and that we're all subject to it. So let me play this and see what you think.
Ladies and gentlemen, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligent, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned, no secret is revealed. That is why the Athenian lawmaker Solon decreed it a crime for any citizen to shrink from controversy. I am asking your help in the tremendous task of informing and alerting the American people, confident that with your help, man will be what he was born to be, free and independent.
Well, of course, the music was not playing in the background when he was speaking, but, it came from something. But remember what happened. I'm just going to confess, I was born in the mid-50s, and so I realize I've sort of lived my whole life as these secret societies, which have existed for way longer than I have, and the world, in fact, they've started right away, I'm sure. But think of what happened. The last legal war was World War II. We got into Korea. Kennedy was the last one to produce the silver Kennedy dollar. He made this kind of speech, was assassinated, and Vietnam got ushered in. You know, George H.W. Bush was around at that time as well, and, you know, various other nefarious factors, but it also can be said that America, that the Vietnam War broke America. I know that, you know, many of my generation, my friends were killed, 58,615 people were killed. How many of those would be our leaders right now? Instead, we have people like John Kerry, who, you know, whatever, I'm not going to diminish anybody's service, but we don't have many of the heroes, they're dead. And then came the radicalization, the 60s and 70s, and AIRS, who some people feel like was a CIA plant as well, and Dorn and the Weather Underground, those kinds of things. And then all of a sudden we end up with Carter and Department of Education, and you can see things speeding up very quickly, 9/11. I honestly believe if we had kept the power to declare war in the hands of Congress like our founders had intended, that we may not have had 9/11, because it allowed these usurpers of our government, not in the same way Obama is blatantly, but people to work behind the scenes to change our policies, to initiate wars, to play with the currency, which they have been since 1913, to wipe out whole generations of youth and so forth, and to really jam down our throats of a whole new kind of era and so forth. 9/11, you know, you hear the TSA people say you lost your rights on 9/11. How come 3 weeks after 9/11 the Patriot Act was ready to go? Just 3 weeks? So, you know, we're still facing these secret societies. We're still facing this kind of large issue. It's no longer tinfoil. It's something that we need to absolutely 100% address. I've come to the conclusion that certainly Obama is a tool, a part of that group. Is it, as Lame Cherry says, you know, the standoff between the Rockefellers and the Rothschild wing? Where does Soros fit in? Has Soros now dumped Obama? Rush Limbaugh slipped up the other day and, you know, mentioned that we have an imposter in the White House. Now, are they going to really say imposter based on not being a natural-born citizen, or are they going to go off on the direction that, oh, he's pretending to be a Christian and he really is a Muslim? That's not what we're talking about. Those are distractions here. Even Lyndon LaRouche's decision or cry to use the 25th Amendment based on Obama being insane. Do you realize how insane that is? Who's gonna stand up and say Obama's insane? You know, I would, but, you know, I'm not the one who rules on the 25th Amendment. No, the 25th Amendment is designed for the, you know, and the only way Obama is disabled right now, he's disabled in many ways, but from the standpoint of invoking a constitutional amendment, it would appear to me that his major disability is his ineligibility. The idea of calling him crazy would raise once again the specter of the left calling everybody else in the world racist for thinking that Obama is crazy. But the, you know, I think that Obama has blown it, blown the cover of the New World Order. We know now way more than we probably were supposed to know. Thank you, Mr. Obama, for slapping us all in the face right after we got kicked down the stairs by George Bush. You know, just as we're getting ourselves up here, you do this. So with all of this planned the way it is, Obama is being let loose. Is he still going to be out of the country next week when the Supreme Court takes the case? What if they don't take the case? You know, I've been put all my eggs in the basket before, and I'm not going to do that again. Now I don't even have any eggs to put in the basket. So I want you all to think about, again, I'm pulling this right back to Terry Lakin. These people who are really standing up for a very simple thing. Obama has made this all about everything else but that basic qualification. And the disrespect shown to Americans by not bothering to produce a document and spending all of this money, constant misery and poverty, setback after setback, arrogance after arrogance, you know, absolutely dissing our traditions. It's just unspeakable. But it's just told in that fact that he would never give up that document, and he sealed all of his records. You know, I don't know if there's ever going to be an Obama library. It's all going to be sealed. Nobody can get in. So I want to play you this this one song this evening, and I'm going to probably close a little bit early just with some music, because I'm sure you don't want to listen to me blab, you know, for another 20 minutes or so. You have to read my blog, and now, you know, you sign on to my show, so thank you. But this song, I know you'll be familiar with. There are lots of stories that go with it, but it basically is the story I'm going to use is there are some heroes out there. There are many of us, and we're sleeping. We are awakening. But remember, you know, the stealth hunter like leaps when you have to, and when things are set up, and we're very careful. So in this song, enjoy the moment we have now, because it's going to be time for us to really move very soon. So let's go here. It's another 5 minutes or so, and then I'll be back in another little bit.
Jungle, the mighty jungle, the lion sleeps tonight. In the jungle, the mighty
That was a theme from The Patriot, a fitting ending for this evening. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Many warm regards, many good feelings to you all. Thank you for joining us. Please keep Terry Lakin in mind. Please keep Commander Kirshner in mind. And we hope that you will have a blessed holiday. Thank you so much. That's it for this evening in Revolution Radio. Walls in Our Minds will return next week at the same time, 7 o'clock, and Revolution Radio will return as well, hopefully with some good news on the eligibility front. Thank you all. Good evening.